Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hardasva Kaya Mahahara Budhi Apatya Gata Riha Shashva Katuka Pashinyas Chaurya Mayuro Sahashaha Arashva Kaya Mahahara Budhi Apatya Katahriyaha Shashvat Katuka Bashinyas Chaurya Mayuru Sahashaha. Harasva Kaya. Having dwarfed bodies. Maha Ahada. Eating too much. Budi Apatya. Having many children. Gata Hriha. Losing their shyness. Shashvat. Constantly. Katuku. Harshly. Bashinya. Speaking. Chaurya. Exhibiting the tendencies of thievery. Maya. Deceit. Uru sahasaha. And great audacity. This is a verse, we will read a number of verses, from the third chapter, 12th canto, from this section entitled, More Symptoms of the Age of Kali. This particular verse is text number 34, translation, and purports by Srila Charidev. Translation, women will become much smaller in size, and they will eat too much. Have more children than they can properly take care of, and lose all shyness. They will always speak harshly, and will exhibit qualities of thievery, deceit, and unrestrained audacity. There's no purport. of course, the men and women, here the women are described, but that should not disturb the women too much because all the previous bad qualities have been descriptions mostly of the men. In other words, everyone in this age becomes disqualified, impious. It is said that physical beauty is a result of pious activity. Janmaishvaya Shruta Shibhir. Education, high birth, opulence, wealth, and physical beauty. These are all signs of piety from the past lifetime. So that someone is tall is a sign of beauty. It is one of the qualities of beauty. Therefore, it is mentioned that they will be smaller in size. And overeating. It is said that a woman's beauty, another quality, is a thin waist, just like it's described that the gopis had very thin waists. More children than one can properly take care of. There's no restriction on how many children one is allowed to have But one should properly take care of these children. That means not only to provide materially, but to give spiritual enlightenment to one's children. It is said that one should not become a mother unless one can actually help one's children to overcome the cycle of repeated birth and death. So in this age, women will have so many children that they can either give protection or help materially or spiritually. And they will lose all shyness, the most important quality which distinguishes the womanly class is their quality of shyness. And it is essential that the children, the girls in our school, have to be taught this quality. A shyness will come if the father and the mother are very protective of their daughters. Then there will be this quality of shyness. And of course, it is very much incumbent upon the mothers to be a good example for their daughters. Otherwise, how will the daughters learn to be shy unless the mothers are shy? There are many qualities of shyness. A woman should, as far as possible, always keep her head covered. Of course, sometimes for going out on Sankirtan or doing business, that's natural that a woman will not do that because it is not understood in our culture. But at least within our own community of devotees, women should always keep their heads covered. I think that that tradition has always been there in all cultures, in all cultures of the world. You'll see in all religions, in all religious bodies, that traditionally women covered their heads. I know that to be a fact with the Catholics. I'm certain it's a fact with the Jews and with every other group. That means the Orthodox. Orthodox means those who are still religious. Actually, that's the only meaning of Orthodox. Of course, nowadays Orthodox may mean something else. But Orthodox meant who followed the original ways. They used to cover their heads. So shyness, and a woman should not expose her body to anyone else except to her husband, and even then really only for the purpose of conceiving children. Everything was done in a way to accelerate one's spiritual life, to get out of this material world. Nowadays you can see all of these symptoms are the pious symptoms are gone. Women expose their bodies. Women, practically every single thing that is promoted is done through the agency of naked women. And the whole result is that everybody is in a feverish condition for enjoying sex life. Even there are so many incidences now of young children engaged in sex life. It has become such a thing that even young children are not spared from it. So this is going on. Amazing things. Children 3, 4, 5 years old engage in sex life. There are cases now coming out in the newspapers about that. So what do they expect? When everything is geared in that way, naturally the children are going to follow. Women here are mentioned, and in this age they will speak harshly and will exhibit qualities of thievery, deceit, and unrestrained audacity. They will steal from their husbands in different ways, steal their money, steal their belongings for different types of enjoyment. They will speak in a very harsh way instead of in a humble and submissive way. Of course, the men will also not be the representatives of Krishna and Guru. So there will be, on both sides, disrespect and poor behavior. Then it mentions in the next verse. Next translation. Businessmen will engage in petty commerce and earn their money by cheating. Even when there is no emergency, people will consider any degraded occupation quite acceptable. And there's a purport. Although other occupations are available, people do not hesitate to work in coal mines, slaughterhouses, steel mills, deserts, floating oil rigs, submarines, and other equally abominable situations. As also mentioned here, businessmen will consider cheating and lying to be a perfectly respectable way to do business. These are all symptoms of the age of Kali. You may wonder what is wrong with working in a steel mill, what is wrong with working in a submarine or in a slaughterhouse, but there is so much wrong. Practically, we have seen in one city in India, Jamshednagar, Tatanagar, where there's a big steel mill, that when you look at a distance of even many miles, you see this huge flame, not up in the sky, but there's a huge furnace, and the whole thing is like red hot. And the men that work there, they always get ill at an early age. The whole thing is very, very horrible. And people's lives are shortened by that kind of activity. Steel mills, slaughterhouses, hearing the horrible sound of animals being put to slaughter constantly. You can imagine what that does to the consciousness. Working in a submarine, you know, being contained within a small structure for months and months, just living in such a... It's like hell. It's hellish. These are hellish types of occupation. And men do this simply to earn money so that they can enjoy sense gratification. No one has any idea anymore what is the healthy way of doing business. The healthy way was based on looking after the cows and tilling the fields and all kinds of activities based around that agricultural, you know, work. Nowadays, very few people work in farms. It's just huge farms with a few big machines. And everybody instead has taken up horrible work. A man has to work 8 hours a day. You see? He has to work 8 hours a day. So the healthy, nice atmosphere of a farm or open air, working in the fields with the animals, this is now lost to all of us. And instead they're working under these terrible, terrible, hellish, you know, man-created ugra karma activities, unwanted activities. So even work should be a pleasure. It should be an opportunity to get closer to God. But actually, it brings you closer to hell, the way it's designed in the modern day and age. So these are all symptoms of this age, on account of one's going further and further away, you know, from Krishna. These things are happening. Here are some more symptoms. Servants will abandon a master who has lost his wealth, even if that master is a saintly person of exemplary character. Masters will abandon an incapacitated servant, even if that servant has been in the family for generations. Cows will be abandoned or killed when they stop giving milk. Purport. In India, the cow is considered sacred, not because Indian people are primitive worshippers of mythological totems, but because Hindus intelligently understand that the cow is a mother. As children, nearly all of us were nourished with cow's milk, and therefore the cow is one of our mothers. Certainly, one's mother is sacred, and therefore we should not kill the sacred cow. But now, even in India, I've heard that at night, in New Delhi, they go rounding up cows that are wandering on the street, and they take them off to slaughter. They have this program, and now they're doing this even in India. Without telling anybody, they're going around and doing this. So, practically, this is all the symptoms of Kali Yuga, not to care for one's mother. They put mothers in their old age home and forget about them. That's a very common thing. All old people are put in the old age home in this country so that you don't have to see them in their suffering condition. And then they're given drugs and dope all the time so that they don't have to feel any pain of suffering. And also, masters are abandoned. Of course, here in this country, there's no concept of master and servant. Everybody is an equal. Even wealthy people hardly have any servants. In India, it's very common, even for a person of an upper, say, a lower middle class family will have at least one servant. if not more than one. Very common. And you may say, well, that doesn't seem fair. It is very fair, because actually these persons are looked after just like a family member. In India, the servant is considered to be one of the members of the family, and they're given very nice care and treatment. And that way they can be looked after. Otherwise, the fact is that some people are not that intelligent. And when they have to look out for themselves, they simply cause trouble for themselves. They engage in so much sinful activity in different ways. Therefore, it's actually better just that they would be in the care of someone who's more intelligent, who can give them protection, give them a little guidance, give them some spending money. That's a better arrangement. That's a more intelligent arrangement. Just like a child. If a child doesn't have a parent to look after the child, or an ashram teacher to look after the child may get into so much mischief. So similarly, someone who's not so intelligent, they'll get into mischief. They're like children. Therefore, those persons were taken as servants. And they were given the same care that another family member was given. And they did so many menial tasks. And they weren't in any anxiety. Oh, I have to get a PhD degree. Now I am unemployed. Everybody gets a degree. Everybody thinks, I got to go to college. I got to go to high school. I got to get my diploma. And then now I have my diploma and I'm unemployed. But practically speaking, you know, we would say that 75% of the people who are in universities don't even belong in the universities. The universities are meant for the most intelligent class of people. That doesn't mean that everybody should not be educated in the real purpose of life. You don't learn the real purpose of life in a university. You don't have to go to a university to learn the purpose of life. In the Vedic culture, even the most simple person knew that the goal of life was to get free from the cycle of birth and death. They knew that the goal of life was to see the deity. The goal of life was to chant Hare Krishna. The goal of life was to do some service to a saintly person. Everyone knew that. They didn't have to go to a university to know that. And that was available. Those types of activities were available for everyone. The temple was open for everyone. Anyone could chant God's holy name. Anyone could worship Tulsi. Anyone could offer some service to a saintly person. So it wasn't that there was unequal rights. Spiritually, everyone had equal rights. But materially, not everyone is the same. And very scientifically and intelligently, society was divided on a material basis. Now, these distinctions have been lost. Everyone wants equality. That is called communism. But it doesn't work. It's a failure. Because even in the communist countries, again, they're still on the platform of distinction. Because the fact is that someone working in a farm can't run the country. And someone, you know, who is an intellectual can't really till the fields. That's what they tried to do in China. All the people who were intellectuals, they decided that these people are puffed up. And in order to train them that everyone is equal, we're going to make them work in the fields. They took all the intellectuals, closed all the universities, closed all the libraries, and sent everyone out to the fields. And the result is that they not only destroyed their culture, they not only destroyed their historical traditions, but they lost, you know, who can imagine, they lost a whole generation of intelligence and leadership. Now they're all regretting it. The leaders in China are regretting this terrible thing, which was called the Cultural Revolution, they called it. Now they all regret that that happened. They say it was fanaticism. So even in these countries where they say, you know, everyone should come on an equal level, there's no equality. Because by nature, we are not equal materially. By nature, we equal spiritually. So spiritual communism should be stressed, not material communism. Spiritual communism is something we follow here. Everyone is equal. Everyone can take prasadam, everyone can see the deity. Everyone has an equal opportunity to have a relationship with Krishna, and Krishna's representative, the spiritual master. You may be a temple sweeper, you may be the president of the temple, but you have the equal rights, spiritually. But the temple sweeper doesn't do the business of the temple president, and neither the temple president needs necessarily to sweep the temple. Both services are equally accepted by Krishna and equally respected by Krishna. But each person should be engaged according to their nature and the work suitable to them. Next, in the Kali Yuga, men will be wretched and controlled by women. They will reject their fathers, brothers, other relatives and friends, and will instead associate with the sisters and brothers of their wives. Thus, their conception of friendship will be based exclusively on sexual ties. So this is, remember, the symptoms of Kali Yuga are not just explaining what's happening now, it's futuristic also. In other words, the Kali Yuga is still going to last another 427,000 years. So gradually things will deteriorate to such a condition that no one will care at all for one's father and mother, no one will care for one's brother, but one will simply, if one is a man, one will simply look in a lusty way at the female relatives of the wife and think how I can also enjoy sex with them. And similarly, the women will simply look at the male relatives of the husband and think, how can I seduce them? This will happen in the Kali Yuga. It is already starting to happen. It will happen more and more and more. You see, people will not have any kind of satisfaction on a spiritual platform. They will only think, I can only become happy through sexual indulgence. And there will be no restraint. Just like if you ever see animals, like dogs, for example, the dogs make no distinction between who is their mother and who is their sister and who is their daughter. They don't care. Once they're old enough to have sex life, they have sex with them equally. Animals make no distinction. So human beings will come to the level of animals and they'll also make no distinction. And this will happen throughout society. Only within the deeply religious culture will such a distinction be made. And therefore it will be very clear who are devotees and who are not devotees. As the Kali Yuga progresses, the distinction is going to become more and more clear. Next. Uncultured men will accept charity on behalf of the Lord and will earn their livelihood by making a show of austerity and wearing a mendicant's dress. Those who know nothing about religion will mount a high seat and presume to speak on religious principles. Purport. The epidemic of bogus gurus, swamis, priests, and so forth is explicitly described here. Nowadays, we hear of so many different charismatic and other leaders who carry on big charity shows and other things to raise money. Just like we were hearing about one man, some of our devotees went for business purposes to one charity benefit. And this man was saying, religion is not something that you have to wait for after you die. Religion means to enjoy as much as you can now. That's what real religion is. The more that you can enjoy is the sign that you are deeply religious. And I mean, it's so gross and grotesque when you see some of these modern day, you know, religious preachers. You know, they'll tell you about how the Lord gave them a big Cadillac and how everyone here can have the same type of Cadillac if they just pray to God. They get to that point and they stand in big arenas with 40,000 people listening to them. And that's in America. And in India, they have their own style. The same type of thing, in promising different types of enjoyment, maybe in a little bit more subtle way, but it's the same program, and collecting money, you see? After it all, collecting money. Just by calling themselves a priest, a minister, or whatever, living in a very high fashionable way, without giving the real business a hand, which is to give love of God. They don't know God. Yesterday we were meeting with one important religious leader and he spent 15 minutes asking us how to spell our names. You know, and then he spent the next 10 minutes, telling us how he spelled his name. You know, and then we were discussing about, you know, different languages. And it went on and on. And no matter how I tried to bring the subject on God, the subject kept going off. of God because he wasn't interested. And I took Ram Shraddha, and the whole time I took him, Ram Shraddha was like this. So the fact is that people are, even the leaders of religion, practically are not very religious anymore. They're not interested even so much in being religious. They do not know what is religion. They do not know what is God. They don't know how to approach God. They don't have the method for doing it. They don't try the method of purifying themselves of all sinful activities. This is going on. We have to show a different example. The most important thing for the devotees of our movement is that you have to experience love of God. That's more important than anything else, because that's going to actually promote our movement more than anything else. More than money, more than buildings, more than anything is the advancement of the individual devotees. That is actually going to be able to convey to others what our movement is. And the essence of that is the chanting of Hare Krishna. I was having a very nice discussion with my godbrother Sridhar Prabhu yesterday, and we were discussing about chanting of the holy name and how important it is. This morning I was listening to the Ten Offenses, and I was realizing how much everybody here takes for granted when they hear the Ten Offenses. It's just like it's become a ritual. For many people, it's a ritual. It's not just that for the Christians or the Jews or others that they're going through empty rituals. You'd be surprised how quickly we become ritualistic. But it says that if you can avoid committing those Ten Offenses, then very quickly, what does it say? What is the tenth offense? Say it.
The tenth offense is not to have complete faith in the chanting of Hare Krishna or to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions.
Now, what comes after that? Everyone.
There's also a physical chanting.
Then, what is next? So you can quickly achieve Krishna Prema if you can chant. Now understand this, that the highest goal of love of God is called Krishna Prema. And it says you can quickly achieve love of Krishna, Krishna Prema, if you can avoid these 10 offenses in chanting 16 rounds. I wonder how many people chant 16 rounds with full concentration. I don't think hardly anyone in this temple does so. I think that you have some of your rounds going on Sankirtan, but I don't think anybody should do that anymore. I think now you have to chant 16 rounds sitting in one place. Unless you think that if you walk around, you're going to be so attentive that you don't become distracted by anything. What to speak of the other fences? In other words, if we start to make a full effort to chant 16 good, perfect rounds, each beat chanting perfectly, then very quickly you will achieve Krishna Prema. Now, if anyone here achieves Krishna Prema, you tell me how empowered that person will be to spread Krishna consciousness. That means no more mental problems that distract you and distract the leaders that have to deal with you. No more problems in so many ways, lack of enthusiasm, lack of this, lack of that. All those problems will be solved. No more agitation if you have love of God. And it says, very quickly you can come to the point of Krishna Prema if you chant 16 rounds unoffensively. It's very simple, isn't it? The whole thing has been reduced simply to chanting Hare Krishna. In the Kali Yuga, the whole religious process boils down to chanting Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada boiled down to 16 rounds without offense. But I say to you that practically nobody in this temple does that. It's something that you take very much for granted, and therefore it will take lifetime or lifetimes. It will take a lifetime or lifetimes when it could have been done very quickly. It only takes a maximum of 2 hours to chant 16 good rounds. That's not a lot of time if you decide to put it aside every day. And if you do it every day, very quickly, you will achieve Krishna Prema. And once you chant the holy name of the Lord, it doesn't only mean on beads, just like when there's kirtan going on, you have to actually be absorbed in hearing the sound vibration. When the Bhagavatam is going on, you have to hear the sound vibration very clearly. If by doing all these other little things you do, the women do, if you're distracted, you're making a mistake. Then you are hearing and chanting offensively. It's only if you really are able to meditate on the words while making your garlands or anything, then it's okay. Otherwise, it's offensive hearing. You don't get the same benefit. So our whole process depends upon hearing and chanting. And we should take it now very seriously. I'm giving this point to you. I hope that you'll all take it to heart that I'm saying this. And tomorrow and even today, that when you have the balance of your rounds, forget about doing it on the way out to Sankirtan. Forget about it on Sankirtan. You know, make it your business. Go home or sit in the temple and just sit down and chant. And I think within a week or 2 weeks, you'll start to chant without committing offenses if you make this effort. You'll see in the beginning it's going to be distractive. You'll think of other things and so many other things. But you'll make very quick advancement after this. You become very strong devotees very soon. It says very quickly one will achieve Krishna Prema. So we have about 2 or 3 minutes. If there's any question, then we'll have a quick guru pooch. That's right. That's right. For preaching, a woman can be very bold. But other than that, this is a special facility in the Kali Yuga that ladies can also engage, especially in preaching work. And preacher must be bold and aggressive. So for preaching, for business, for other purposes, women should be as bold as men. But when it comes to ordinary dealings within the community, then they should be shy. And if you say, well, how can you do both? You can do both. They're not exclusive of each other. You can be very bold in preaching and business, and at the same time become very shy. What is the saying? What is that saying? Yes, a lioness in the chase and a lamb at home. You can be a lion in the chase, but be a lamb at home. Man or woman, doesn't matter. Another question?
The Japa Reform Notebook. His Divine Grace Satsang Maharaj explains that while we're chanting Hare Krishna, it's okay to ask Krishna, can we please engage me in your service? Oh, dear Lord, please engage me in your service. And I've heard you say in the tape before that perfect chanting is perfect listening.
Yeah, the best way to chant Hare Krishna is to hear the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name. That means automatically you're praying. When you say Hare Krishna, what do you think it means? You're already praying, my dear Lord, engage me in your service. That means you want to echo. When you say Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, you're saying, oh Lord, please engage in your service. So now why do you want to echo it in an English translation? Is it necessary? You can do that to begin chanting. When you begin your chanting, you can feel, I am very insignificant, I'm a very menial person, Krishna, please accept me. Then start to chant. Just hear the sound vibration. That's the best chanting of all. There are different levels of recommendation accordingly, but you'll see as you advance, the best chanting is when you simply hear Krishna's holy name. But if you're such an agitated mind that you're thinking of a million other things, then all right, then think, Krishna, please engage me in your service. But gradually, when you can just think of that, then stop thinking of that and just chant Hare Krishna. The best thing is to simply hear the holy name. That is Krishna. That is service to Krishna. You're saying, please engage in your service. That is the service. Okay? So let us have the Guru Pooja now. Jai. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga.